Trityayam Shuklapakshe Navamyam Attakartike Chatashvishvap Yashtakasu Hemante Shire Tata Mage Chasita Tatavyam Magaraka Samagame Rakya Chanu Machacha Masarkshani Yutanyapi Vadasyam Anuradakshach Shavanastishra Uttadaha Tishrishve Kada Shivasu Janmaksha Shrona Yoga Yuk. Okay. You can repeat. Ayane. On the day when the sun
begins to move north,
or Makara Sankranti, and on the day when the sun
begins to move south,
or Karkata Sankranti, it's Karkata. Vishuve, on the Mesha Sankranti, get an echo in here, and on the Tula Sankranti, Kuryat, one should perform, Vyatipati, in the yoga named Vyatipata. Dinakshaye, on that day in which three tithis are combined. Chandra Aditya Uparage, at the time of the eclipse of either the moon or the sun. Cha, and also Dvadasyam Shravaneshu, on the 12th lunar day, and in the nakshatra named Shravana. Cha, and Trityayam, on the Akshaya Tritiya day, Shukla Pakshe, in the bright fortnight of the month. Navamyam, in the ninth lunar day. Ata, also. Kartike, in the month of Kartik. October, November. Chatashru, on the four. Api, also. Ashtakasu, on the Ashtakas. Hemante, before the winter season. Shirsire, in the winter season. Tata, and also. Mage, in the month of Mag. January to February. Cha, and Asita Saptamyam, on the seventh lunar day of the bright fortnight. Maga Rakha Samadame, in the conjunction of Magas Nakshatra and the full moon day. Rakya, with the day of the completely full moon. Cha, and Anumacha, with a full moon day, when the moon is slightly less than completely full. Cha, and Masarkshani, the nakshatras that are the sources,
of the names of the various months. Yutani are conjoined. Api also. Dwadasham on the 12th lunar day. Anuradha, the nakshatra name Anuradha. Syat may occur. Shavanaha, the nakshatra name Shavana. Tishraha, the three nakshatras. Uttaraha, the nakshatras named Uttara. Uttara Phalguni. Uttara Sada. And Uttara Bhadra Pada. Tishrishu. On three. Ekadashi. The 11th lunar day. Va. Or. Asu. On these. Janma Riksha. Of one's own Janma Nakshatra. Or birth star. Shonam. Of Shavana Nakshatra. Yoga. By a conjunction. Yuk. Having. Okay, translation. One should perform the Shada ceremony on the Makara Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move north, or on the Karkata Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move south. One should also perform this ceremony on the Mesha Sankranti day and the Tula Sankranti day, in the yoga name Yatipata, on that day in which the three lunar tithis are conjoined, during an eclipse of either the moon or the sun, on the 12th lunar day, and in the Shravana Nakshatra. One should perform this ceremony on the Akshaya Tritiya day, on the 9th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Kartika, on the 4 Ashtakas in the winter season and the cool season, on the 7th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Magh, during the conjunction of Magha Nakshatra and the full moon day, and on the days when the moon is completely full, or not quite completely full, when these days are conjoined with the nakshatras from which the names of certain months are derived. One should also perform the Shraddha ceremony on the 12th lunar day, wherein it is in conjunction with any of the nakshatras named Anuradha, Shravana, Uttara, Phalguni, Uttara Sahara, or Uttara Bhadrapada. Again, one should perform this ceremony when the 11th lunar day is in conjunction with either Uttara Phalguni or Uttara Shadha or Uttara Bhadra Pada. Finally, one should perform this ceremony on days conjoined with one's own birth star, Janma Nakshatra, or with Shravana Nakshatra. Okay, everyone remembers all those things? You do? You're pretty good. You should be giving class then. Anyway, so, purport by Zvangre Shilapopad Shilapopad Ki Jai. The word ayana means path or going. The 6 months when the sun moves toward the north are called Uttarayana, or the northern path, and the 6 months when it moves south are called Dakshinayana, or the southern path. These are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 8th chapter, text 24 to 25. The first day when the sun begins to move north and enter into the zodiacal sign of Capricorn is called Makara Sankranti. And the first day when the sun begins to move south and enter the sign of Cancer is called Karkata Sankranti. On these 2 days of the year, one should perform the Shraddha ceremony. Vishuva or Vishuva Sankranti means Mesha Sankranti, or the day in which the sun enters the sign Aries. Tula Sankranti is the day on which the sun enters the sign Libra. Both of these days occur only once within a year. The word yoga refers to a certain relationship between the sun and the moon as they move in the sky. There are 27 different degrees of yoga, of which the 17th is called Vyatipata. On the day when this occurs, one should perform the Shada ceremony. A tithi, or lunar day, consists of the distance between the longitude of the sun and that of the moon. Sometimes the tithi is less than 24 hours. When it starts after sunrise on a certain day and ends before the sunrise of the following day, the previous tithi and the following tithi both touch the 24-hour day between the sunrises. This is called Triya Sparsha, or a day touched by some portion of three tithis. Srila Jiva Goswami has given quotations from many shastras stating that the Shraddha ceremony of oblations to the forefathers should not be performed on the Ekadashi tithi. When the tithi of the death anniversary falls on the Ekadashi day, the Shraddha ceremony should be held not on Ekadashi, but on the next day, or Dwadashi. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, it is said, Ye kurvanti mahi pala shradham chai kadashi dine trayaste narakam yanti nata bhukta cha prerakaha. If one performs the Shraddha ceremony of oblations to the forefathers on the Ekadashi tithi, then the performer, the forefathers for whom the Shraddha is observed, and the Purohit, or the family priest who encourages the ceremony, all go to hell. Alright, so, I'm going to read all those verses again, but, so, Omagana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, of course, this is extremely complicated, but just to summarize the whole thing, it's not that you perform the Shraddha ceremony on every one of these days, but you perform it on those days that are connected with the anniversary of the death of someone. Got that? So, in other words, these are the auspicious days that you can perform the Shraddha ceremony. Not that every... Well, if you did it on all these days, you'd be doing it practically throughout the whole year, which is not really the appropriate thing. So, let's describe what the Shraddha ceremony is. It involves something called putras. You know what a putra is? A son. And the word putra literally means in Sanskrit, a one who saves one from what? Hell. Because that's the business of a son, to save the family from hell, to save the forefathers. Forefathers doesn't mean four fathers. Nowadays, since people get divorced and remarry, then they have four fathers. Right? Or four mothers. At least you can. But forefathers means basically your ancestors, which means the people who lived before you. So, what happens if someone is engaged in karma kandya activities, they're inadvertently sometimes performing impious activities. Even if you try your best with karma kandya activities, you make mistakes. What's an example of that in the Bhagavatam? Anyone think about that?
King Riga.
King Riga, okay, good. He was performing his karma kandya activities. He was really expert in all these things, calculating all these days, and he was giving away millions of cows to the brahmanas. I mean, that's really what you're supposed to do. But to give cows to the brahmanas, don't give cows to the sannyasis because they're traveling. You give other things, you know. Nowadays, of course, the sannyasis, they take credit cards. So, but anyway, Kali Yuga sannyasis. I'm one of them. So you would give cows to the brahmanas, so household brahmanas. Because cows mean you gotta milk them. It's not that you just take a cow and just stands in front of you looking beautiful and moos for you. So there actually also other things were given to the brahmanas too, but you even gave them wives. It's interesting. The kshatriyas would arrange for wives for the brahmanas. Whatever. So, gold and other things like that is described during these ceremonies, like when Lord Ramchandra performed the Rajasuya sacrifice, all the brahmanas came and he was just like pouring out the wealth to them. The brahmanas, it's one of the reasons the brahmanas would all come to the sacrifices. It's time to make money. It is. I mean, the kings would just open up their coffers, which means the treasury, and just give everything. So this King Riga, he was actually quite generous in this respect. He would give millions of cows. And one cow just happened to wander back, and he gave it away twice. So this is not so good, to give away something that you've given to someone else. And so therefore, he got cursed, which is what you find a lot of times in the Vedic literatures, that all these curses are going around, isn't it? It's really interesting. Now you read the Mahabharata, then you got a Pandu who's getting cursed. I mean, so many people getting cursed from time to time. Or the Ramayana. You got half of the demons in the Ramayana were actually like Kabanda, Virata. They were actually either celestial living entities or some higher beings, and they got cursed. Or Dasarath gets cursed because he kills a sage's son or a son who is taking his parents around. So anyway, so this King Riga got cursed, and as a result, he had to become a lizard. Lizard, you know what a lizard is? They have lizards here. Yeah, Nietzsche had a lot of lizards there. And, you know, little lizard. So he was at the bottom of the well as a lizard. And then, actually, he got the choice. When he went to Yamaraj, Yamaraj gave him a choice. You want to suffer first or enjoy first? And he was thinking about that, and he said, I wanted to suffer first and then I'll enjoy it, because my enjoyments can be practically unlimited, isn't it? It's just like when you eat, when I was young, I would eat a sandwich. You eat the outside first, right? Isn't it? Not you. He's more renounced. Because the outside doesn't have any of the filling in it. You understand? The nice part is the inside. The outside is the crust. It's called a crust. You know, this hard part on the outside. So I would eat around it, trying to get to the inside. So in the same way, King Riga, he wanted the bad stuff first and then the good stuff. So the bad stuff was, you know, he got a lizard, and the good stuff was he got to be taken out of the well by Krishna, and he regained his body. So anyway, so there's danger. It's described as danger on the royal path, just like we have two paths, even in Krishna consciousness. One is called Pravritti Marg, and the other one's called Nivritti Marg. You know what that is? Pravritti Marg is the Marg of enjoyment. It's like, it's not that every householder is on Pravritti Marg. That's not my point. But when people get married, sometimes they think they have a license for sense gratification. Right? You know the license for sense gratification? You don't know the Brahmachari. It's like if I give you... Yes, you know what it is. Like on Sunday feast, you have a brahmacharis have a license for sense gratification. And then they get sick the next day. And they wonder, why am I getting so many colds and miserable in life? Just like yesterday we visited someone who doesn't enjoy himself by the mouth inappropriately, and he's very healthy, isn't he? Right? He was an organic farmer. You know, just very, very nice. Devotee, actually. Very nice. And he was showing off how strong his body was. And he asked another devotee to show his stomach. And the devotee was embarrassed because the devotee had a big stomach. Anyway, so that's a license. So he didn't use his license for sense gratification. So sometimes they describe that household life is a license for sense gratification. But the interesting thing about licenses, especially if you have a car license, it's not an unrestricted speed any way or any time you want license, is it? You've got to observe, you can still get a ticket. So when you get a license to drive a car, you have to be careful. Of course, when I first got a license to drive a car, I wasn't careful. Myself and my friends, we would have races at every red light. You know what that is?
the young people sometimes they stop at the red lights and they go, and the red light turns to green, and guess what? You know, the screeching of the wheels. So we misused our license. Of course, we didn't get caught. One time I got caught. I was speeding at, I think it was 140 kilometers an hour in a 30 kilometer zone. It was in a state park. And he pulled me over. And I said, he said, what are you doing? And I said, I didn't see any policemen. He said, that's not an excuse. So, so you get a license, but anyway, so that's the pravritti marg. You know, when you get some license for sense gratification, and then you have to be very careful because the Prabhupada says there's danger even on the royal path. You understand? That's Prabhupada's statement. Prabhupada even said that, yeah, not only talking about household life as a license for sense gratification, but even Prabhupada said, like, so many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam. It's interesting, isn't it? So many stalwarts, that means like strong devotees, have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam. What does that mean exactly? That means they ate too much. Right? If you're vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, yo vegam, udura pashta vegam. You eat too much, not only do you get sick, because Prabhupada said that's one of the causes of sickness, but if you eat too much, you get angry, lusty, and all those other nice things. Udura pashta vegam, jivo vegam. You know that verse? Udura pashta vegam. So, even the brahmacharis can misuse their license for sense gratification. Of course, when you first join the movement, you're encouraged to misuse your license. You're encouraged to eat so much and lie on the side. But if after 40 years in the Hare Krishna movement, you're still doing that, you're either dead or lusty, or one of the two, or both. Because how to be dead and lusty, I don't know. But anyway, so that's a license. That's called pravritti marg. On the nivritti marg, the one is supposed to be giving up things, renouncing things, you know, austere. And of course that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. Vairagya Vijani Jibhakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Purana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari Kripam Buddhya Diyastvam Aham Prabhadye. Our Lord Chaitanya taught this pravritti marg. It doesn't mean like torturing yourself. It means not accepting any more than necessary to keep the body and soul together. You understand? There's a certain amount. I mean, we do need, like, you're wearing a sweater. That's all right. Nivritti marg doesn't mean give up your sweater and walk around like a Nagababa covered by ashes. You know what Nagababa is? These are these people walk around with tridents and they're naked except for their ashes. Actually, during the recent Kumbh Mela, many Western people dressed up as Nagababas so they could smoke marijuana with them. Because the police in India won't touch the Nagababas. They won't arrest them, even if their marijuana is coming out of their ears. They won't arrest them. So many Westerners thought, hey, this is cool. Go to Kumbh Mela and smoke as much marijuana and even heavier things. You know, they put the marijuana together or concentrate it. I don't know about these things that much. Anyway. Big, you know, not big cigarettes or whatever, like they smoke on it. I've been offered it by them. I didn't never took it. They said, one time I went to a Shiva temple and they said, Maharaj, Mahaprasad, about Shiva. and I said, no, thank you. It's a Kadashi today. Not supposed to smoke on a Kadashi. So anyway, so Nivritti Marg means, you know what you need, and you don't eat more. You eat the right amount, like Krishna says in the Gita. The yogi doesn't sleep too much, sleep too little, eat too much, eat too little. Mityahara vihara sha. He's balanced in his eating, especially yahara and nidra, all those things like that. So that's nivritti marg. So, but on the pravritti marg, there's a lot of dangers we're talking about here. So
So therefore, even if one is following the Karmakanda practice on the Pravritti Mark, there's every chance of making a mistake. So in order to take care of your mistakes, it's actually interesting also, in the when one's reciting the Vedic literatures, the traditional Vedic Brahmanas, they always had another Brahman who was, let's say, correcting them, and another Brahman who was correcting the mistake, you know, observing them and then correcting the mistake. There were like three Brahmanas, one chanting, one observing, and one correcting the mistake. And also after you do a fire sacrifice, you have this whole thing. I don't know if you noticed yesterday that Dadi Bhaksha recited this whole Sanskrit prayer, which is, you know, if we committed any mistake in this prayer, in this performance, you know that prayer? Then please, by Vishnu Smaranam, let us be forgiven. Vishnu Smaranam means remembering Vishnu. So anyway, so you make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, sometimes I was talking to someone, you know, I talk to devotees, they feel real guilty they made a mistake. They say, oh, I made a mistake, I don't know what's wrong with me, I made a mistake. I said, well, welcome to the club. We all make mistakes. Actually, there's a statement in business that you should make a lot of mistakes, but only make the same mistake once. You understand? You learn from your mistakes. So anyway, the Karmakanda practice, you make mistakes. In order to make up for the mistakes, you got to have a son. And actually, some of the ladies will complain. What about us, you know? But yes, also ladies are called putris. But sometimes you find the kings or something like that so upset because they're only having daughters. Like Dasarath, before he had Lord Ram, Bart, Shatrughna, Lakshman, he had a daughter. Did you know this?
Yes.
Her name was Shanti. But he was so upset he didn't have a son, he gave Shanti away to his friend Romapad, which means the king with hairy feet. Romapad. Anyway, so that's true. And then there's the whole story of Rishi Sringa, but I'm not going to tell that story right now. So basically, generally, yeah, you need a son, and the son performs the Shraddha ceremony. And that Shraddha ceremony is to mitigate, that means to minimize or sort of get rid of all the mistakes you made in performance of the Karmakanda. Because otherwise, without the Shraddha ceremony, you would be in hell. Instead, you go to this nice place called Pitriloka. Pitriloka is like the islands in the Adriatic. Like, you know, the island that we were at is very beautiful, but without the fighting between the devotees. No politics in Pitriloka. It's like Prabhupada said, if there's any nice place in this material world, it's Hawaii. Because Hawaii is like that, the islands in the Adriatic, but all year long it's perfect weather. The weatherman, he actually gets bored, because it's the same weather every day. You know, 23, 24 degrees, sunshine, beautiful water, everything like that. It's the most, Prabhupada said it's the nicest place in the material world. So if you're interested in enjoying, you should go there. But the problem is, the devotees who go there, they're in Maya, mostly. Not all of them. It's also the most dangerous place in the material world. We've had so many sannyasis who have gone there and they've never returned. It's like the place of no return. Anyway. Yeah, because you go there and everything's nice. You don't have to, all the trees have avocados and mangoes growing on them and bananas growing. You just wander through the woods and you just eat and you remain healthy. And these beautiful waterfalls. When I first went there, I just thought, this is heaven. You actually jump from the top of the waterfall. You know, you've seen pictures of stuff like that, and you jump into the stream there. It's all fresh water. And the waterfall is just so beautiful. It's unimaginable how beautiful it is. That's why. So, of course, none of you should go after hearing this class. So that's like Pitriloka. Pitriloka is actually much more than that, of course. I mean, because in Hawaii, people still get old and still get sick
And they still fight with each other. And there's still robbers and dacoits and everything like that. But in Pitcherloka, it's just very nice. So it's like when your grandfather, great-grandfather, great-grandmother, they go to Pitcherloka, it's like the Shraddha ceremony is like you're paying their bills. Like, for example, if your parents go to an old people's home and you got to pay for it, it's like you're paying the bills by doing the Shraddha ceremony. And as soon as you stop the Shraddha ceremony, Shine Puni Marcha Lokam Vishanti, Krishna says in the Gita. You know what that means? Anybody know that verse? What does it mean? Yeah. When their good karma runs out, whether they're in the heavenly planets, or, you know, the Pitriloka is like a heavenly planet, then they come back to the earth. You know, so you gotta keep doing it. You gotta keep doing the Shraddha. Shraddha ceremony forever and ever. Of course you can't do forever and ever, so you gotta have sons too to do for your grandparents. And he has to have sons. And he has a son. But at some point it all stops. You know, at some point, you know, someone decides to take sannyas instead of getting married. Then it's been just like this story in the Mahabharata. I forgot the name of the person. But anyway, he was the father of Jarakarna. Jarakarna, yeah, that's the name. So anyway, so he was wandering. He became renounced and he was really happy. He was chanting Hare Krishna. Jai Nitai Gaur, Radhe Shyam, you know, whatever. He was in the forest chanting and being very happy. And then he came upon Jarakaru or something like that. I may have the name a little wrong. So anyway, so he came upon a bunch of people hanging upside down over a hole, and they were held by a rope, and the rat was eating the rope, and they were going to fall into this hole. And he asked, who are you? And they said, we're suffering because our descendant, that is, you know, the person who descends from the family, that's the opposite of ancestor, is not performing the Shraddha ceremony, because in order to perform the Shraddha ceremony, one has to be married, and he's not married. And this person asked them, who is your descendant? Who are you talking about? And they said, his name is Jarakaru. And the guy said, that's me. And so he was thinking, you know, he had a dilemma. He was thinking, I have to save these people because they're all my ancestors, but I don't want to get married. I'm having so much fun wandering in the forest. Anyone's heard this story before? It's a Mahabharata story. I'm having so much fun, you know, wandering in the forest. So then he was thinking, all right, I'll get married, but only if there's someone of the same name, with the same name as me. And he's thinking, this is a trick, you know. I'm never going to marry a girl with the same name as me. And plus, if she ever disagrees with me, she's out. So we have these two conditions. You know, if she disagrees with me or makes me angry one time, then she's finished. So he's thinking, boy, I made a deal, got free from the whole thing. So then he was going through the forest, and finally he said, well, last chance, getting a little too old, get married. And he said, called out in the forest, if there's anyone named Jarakaru, please, any girl, this is your last chance. And then this Vasuki, yeah, that's how the story goes. Vasuki, he was one of the serpent people. He comes out and says, well, I happen to have my sister here, and she has the same name as you. And the sage was practically saying, oh, damn it, you know, I thought I got away with it. And so they got married. And what happened is that, and she was pregnant. There was a reason, actually why Vasuki wanted to get his sister married to the sage. Because their son, the son of the sage and his wife, would actually be the one who saved the snakes from the Sarpa Yajna,
That means the snake sacrifice of Maharaj Janamejaya. Maharaj Janamejaya was the son of who? Does anyone remember? Parikshit. And he really didn't like snakes that much. Why didn't he like snakes? Takshaka, the snake, had killed his father. So he was killing all the snakes. So there had to be someone to stop the snake sacrifice, or else we wouldn't have any snakes. I mean, some snakes are kind of nice. Really, that's true. They actually, you don't think so? They eat rats and they eat frogs. I mean, it's not that all snakes are bad. There's some very, very cute snakes. And useful. Actually, every animal has some use. You know, they're all connected with each other somehow or other to keep the earth going. You may think it doesn't, but it actually does. Even the bugs have a use. So this Zarakaro, what happened is that his wife was pregnant, and one day he was resting a little bit too much, and it came time for him to perform some ceremony they do at the sanjas. You know, the sanjas, the time of the day, like the beginning of the day, the evening of the day. And so his wife was thinking, if I wake him up, he's going to be angry. But if I don't, he'll miss his sanja performance. And she was just thinking, what should I do? And so she said, well, out of chastity of my husband, I should wake him up. So she woke him up, and he was angry that she woke him up, even though she woke him up for a good reason. And he said, I'm gone. Back to my forest life. And she said, but you're supposed to have a son before you go. And he said, Astika, there will be. And Pussy was already pregnant. And that was the son who was a Brahmin also, but half Brahmin, half snake. He didn't look like a snake, but, you know, snake heritage. And he was the one who stopped the snake sacrifice of Maharaj Janamejaya just before Takshaka and even Indra were thrown into the fire. Because Indra was protecting Takshaka, the snake bird who killed Maharaj Parikshit. And so the Brahmanas were chanting the mantra, basically that that Takshaka and his protector would actually fall in the fire. And so Astika arrived on the scene, and normally when Brahmins arrive on the scene, you've got to pay respects and do whatever they want. Just like the story of Vamana arriving on the scene of Bali Maharaja's sacrifice, right? And therefore, Vamana was given what he asked for, which is 3 steps to land. And the same thing, Astika asked that the snake sacrifice would be stopped, so that he saved the snake. So anyway, so that's a story about, you know, how it's necessary to have putras to save the ancestors. Right. So therefore, you can ask, then aren't our renunciates in the Krishna conscious movement acting very irresponsibly? Because they're not saving their ancestors. You know, here we got 2 brahmacharis and 1 sannyasi. What about their parents? Don't they want to save their parents? Well, actually, even better than the Shraddha ceremony is devotional service. Because if one performs devotional service, this is also mentioned in the case of Prahlad Maharaj saving his father, Hiranyakashipu. Then, like many generations, there's different injunctions in different Vedas. Sometimes it says 11 generations, sometimes say 10, sometimes say 100. I mean, you read different books. But in any case, your past family members, and even your future family members, become benefited and liberated because you're a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That doesn't mean they go to Pitri Loka. That means they become free of their karma, and they get an opportunity to perform devotional service. So you're actually doing the best thing for your parents. See, one of the arguments that I ran into when I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement had nothing to do with Shraddha, because my mother didn't know about Shraddha. It was, what about me, she was saying. You're supposed to serve me. You're my son. You're supposed to serve me and become a nice doctor. Because she didn't have an idea about future lives or karma or reincarnation or anything like that. So I said to her, I'm serving you by becoming a devotee. Because in this way you'll get liberated. And she was thinking, liberation? What the hell is that? I'd rather you become a doctor. So, you know, our mothers, they always want to, not always, but generally they, anyway, maybe you don't experience this, they want their children to do things that will please them. Especially, like with Indian families, because I don't have an Indian family, but very similar to an Indian family, the type of family I was brought up in. They just, you know, they put so much pressure on their children. In fact, my mother put so much pressure on me that as soon as I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was informed that she was dying. You know, I was told, your mother is dying now, and you are the cause of it because you joined the Hare Krishna movement. And, of course, now it's about 40-something years later, and she's still alive. She took a long time to die. Anyway, and she swims 50, she's 85 years old and swims 50 laps in a swimming pool every day. She's stronger than any of you. So, I guess, whatever it is, I did the right thing. So that is the point. When one joins the Krishna consciousness movement, takes up the Sankirtan movement, you're doing the best thing for your family, and you really don't have to worry about the Shraddha ceremony. I mean, it's generally a karmakanja type thing for people engaged in karmakanja. Although devotees sometimes work with people who are performing the Shraddha ceremony. And if you're in a certain culture, you may do it. Like Advaitacharya, he did this ceremony. Because that's the cultural thing. You don't want to act in such a way to disturb the minds of people. You know, we do follow some cultural norms. Like when someone comes up to you and shakes your hand, you shake their hand. You don't go just like English norm. Isn't it? Like if you're meeting with some government official, you shake their hands. Right? I mean, you follow certain cultural norms. You don't disturb people's minds. Lord Chaitanya follows certain cultural norms. You know, he dressed in terms of his culture. You know, why did he wear a dhoti? Because that was the culture he was in. I mean, I'm not saying if Lord Chaitanya appeared in Croatia, because he probably wouldn't. But he followed cultural norms. You understand? So Advaitacharya, following the cultural norms, even though he's incarnation of Mahavishnu and Sadashiva and all those other nice things, he performed the Shraddha ceremony. But one interesting thing he did when he performed the Shraddha ceremony, he gave the plate of the Shraddha ceremony, which is supposed to be given to the best of the Brahmanas, he gave it to who? Does anyone remember? Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur, I mean, that shocked society too. He was teaching society. Because here was someone who was considered outside of the Varnashram culture, not only lower in the Varnashram culture, but completely outside because he was born in a Muslim family. I mean, India was so strict that when the Muslims came into India, even if they threw water on you, you were considered to have lost your caste and become a Muslim. Did you know that? They take water from their water pot and go, I'm a Muslim now. I mean, I wish we could make devotees so easily like that. Isn't it? I just go around with maha water all the time. All right, you're a devotee. Oh no, I'm a devotee. Oh no. It's true, but they don't function like that immediately. And you go around with one of those super soakers. You know? You know what a super soaker is? It's one of those water pumps up like that, and you make devotees. So the Muslims used to do that. Oh, Bhakti, I didn't even see you. Good to see you. You just got here?
10 minutes ago.
Oh, I didn't even see you. I was so absorbed in what I was saying. But it's nice to see you. So, anyway, the Muslims used to do that. And so imagine Haridas Thakur's situation. I mean, he was born in a Muslim family. You understand? It was bad enough. Like even Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, because they worked for Muslims, they couldn't enter the temple of Lord Jagannath. And here they were born in a high-class Brahmin family. And they worked. And they didn't even want to work. They were forced to work because the Muslims were threatening their friends, the villagers, the other devotees. But still, they were considered outcasts. So there's Haridas Thakur being given the respect of the highest Brahmin. So Advaitacharya was teaching that devotees are actually automatically, you know, Hobata Swapachito Garyan, Yajivagre Vartate, Namatumyam Dhus Dhus Juhuva Shashna Arya, Brahmanucha Nama, Grananti-yate. When it's chanting the holy name, it's automatically assumed. I mean, like Haridas Thakur, not you just chant once. But if you're chanting the holy names, it's assumed that you're automatically performed all the preliminary rituals and you've achieved the status of Brahman. So anyway, so this is the Shraddha ceremony. So we don't really have to do that unless you find yourself in India. I mean, this is like one of my friends just had his father pass away in Orissa. Orissa is one of the states in India. That's where Puri is. And he's a devotee, and he's not really into all these rituals, but he got involved because his whole family's there. He had to do 11 days of death rituals, you know, karma kanja rituals. And he just, I've been calling him like every other day because he lost his father. I wanted to console him. And he's just complaining about all the rituals he has to do. But he has to do that to satisfy his family. You understand? I mean, that's, so sometimes you got to do things to satisfy your family when they're not devotional service, but really it's only devotional service, the chanting the Lord's holy names that gives one's ancestors or liberates one's ancestors. So, any questions or comments? Yeah.
So those persons were hanging their upside down, and they were complaining that Brahman is actually performing Shraddha ceremony.
Yeah.
But he was devoted, he was completely absorbed, as I understood.
Yeah.
So how do you understand this? Because it seems to me he was following a much higher principle.
That's right.
So, but at that moment they were complaining like that, and they were actually in that dangerous position.
Yeah.
So, but is it that if he really observed this Shraddha ceremony, that they will be immediately safe from that position? How to understand it?
Well, first of all, it was a pastime to force the guy to get married. Because otherwise, all the snakes would have been killed. I mean, this is a pastime of the Mahabharata. To make the guy feel so guilty. It's like sometimes you control people by guilt. Like I described, my mother did that too. I'm dying unless you leave the Krishna consciousness movement. I said, you know, I said, well, if you die, that's your problem, not mine. You're the one that, in other words, I didn't want her to die, but I just said, you're the one who decided to do it. Don't blame me. Because if you're controlled by someone else's guilt, what is that called psychologically?
Manipulation.
Manipulation, but there's another word. It's like you become codependent with them. In other words, they can control you. Codependent means that you think that you're the source of someone else's happiness or distress. That's really what codependency is. So you think that I'm making you miserable. No, you're making yourself miserable, Prabhu. You understand? We can only make ourselves miserable or happy. But people control us by this idea that we're making them miserable. Or, you know, like, this is called verbal abuse. If you really love me, you would do this. You know, implicit in that statement is you don't love me, and you better show that you do. It's a form of verbal abuse. I mean, I've studied about this. There's many books about verbal abuse. There's actually one interesting book, The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense. When someone does that to you, you know, when someone does that, you know, you feel horrible if someone says, if you really love me, you would buy me a new sari. Because men don't say that. But, and it, you know, the guy thinks, he feels like a knife has been put in his heart. Because what he hears, subconsciously is that she thinks I don't love her. You understand? It's actually manipulative. So instead of responding, oh yeah, I'm going right now to buy you, sorry. But instead of responding, I do love you, you know, which is really not really appropriate. The man, there's actually a verbal self-defense way to respond. He said, what makes you think I don't love you? You know, he just like goes back and deals with it. And she said, well, nothing really. I was just trying to get a sorry.
You know, so there's ways to deal with guilt trips. I should give a whole seminar on it. Because people do manipulate like that. It's a very, especially in mother-son relationships, a mother-daughter, or husband-wife relationships, there's so much manipulation that goes on with guilt trips. You know, also, you know, even between two people in the temple, or, you know, anyway, unfortunately, Prabhupada never used that technique with us. You know, Prabhupada's love in dealing with us was causeless. You know, it was always there. Didn't have any price for it. But, so we shouldn't succumb to that sort of, that guilt stuff. You know, I know what I'm doing in life, it's right, and I know it's helping you. And that's, you know, if you cause your own problems, and I cause my problems. And I'm responsible for my problems, and you're responsible for your problems. Don't blame me. You know, like, it's a typical codependence thing is if you're married to someone who's drinking, you know, he's a drunkard, and then you think it's my fault, right? You know, because the man keeps telling the woman that, it's your fault, I'm drinking. Isn't it? I don't know if you've experienced this before, but you haven't. I haven't either. Thank God. But I counsel enough people so I know what's happening. I hear it. It's something I hear time and time again. That I feel responsible because he's drinking, he's suicidal, he's angry, it's my fault. No, it's not your fault. It's his fault. Or, you know, vice versa, it's her fault. We're responsible for our own Krishna consciousness. You gotta fly your own plane. Like we were using this example last night of flying solo. Prabhupada said you gotta fly your own plane, Krishna conscious wise. Especially at the time of death. You know, nobody else is there with you. I mean, of course, Krishna hopefully is there, or Yamaraj is with you. Yamaraj is next to you, you look next to you on the plane, and there's Yamaraj, the Yamadutta. So I'm on the wrong plane. Let me off. And Yamaraj says, there's no way off of this plane. Can't jump, there's no parachutes. So, any other questions? Yeah.
Yeah, when I was reading Mahabharata, I couldn't relate with the snakes and people because they had the relationships, but they're kind of snakes. But you said now they're really people, like they have. So I don't know how to understand that. Do they have snakes or people, or they can be both, or what?
They both. These higher entities, the sons of Kadru, we were talking about. Kadru gave birth to all the snakes. And Vinata, she gave birth to Garuda and Aruna. Anyway, this is the whole story of the Mahabharata. But they could take whatever form they want. I mean, even it's described in the Ramayana about these monkeys like Sugriva and other monkeys in Hanuman. They could take any form they want. I mean, Hanuman, when he first approached Lord Ram, he appeared as a Brahmin, a very educated, you know, completely erudite, I mean, expert in Sanskrit. He was a Brahmin. So, they had different forms, and they weren't just like little, slithering little snakes. And, you know, that some man marries a snake, you know. You imagine that at the marriage ceremony? Do you accept Mrs. Cobra as your wife? You can... But please don't kiss her because she bites. Here's your wife. Please stay away. Anyway, no, she had a human form. There's so many stories about these snakes. Also, Bhimsen, he went down and was taken care of by the snakes, which were his ancestors. You know the story of the Mahabharata? And they fed him this rasa kundala, which made him stronger than he normally was. So, you know, the snakes are there. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
in my own way, I have my direction, I don't care about anybody else. How to make this?
That's a good question. Yeah, I didn't say you be selfish. That wasn't my statement. But you take responsibility for your own feelings, positive or negative, in your own life, positive or negative. And once you take responsibility to fulfill your basic needs, because that's part of my seminar, one seminar, then you naturally have a need. I mean, it's almost even a selfish need. You have a need to be compassionate. It's one of your basic needs. You have a need for social interaction. You have a need for love. You have a need for helping others. I mean, it actually makes people feel good when they help others, isn't it? I mean, I feel good when I help others Krishna consciousness, become closer to Krishna. So we have a need to help others. So even if you're talking about selfishness, if you really want to be selfish, then you'll help others. Because that makes you feel good. Makes you feel a lot better than when you eat a big plate of Mahaprasadam. Because when you eat a big plate of Mahaprasadam, 4 hours later, you don't feel so good. Or the next morning, right? Gokul's been going around with me, and they're feeding me very simple food, and they're feeding him like lasagna and all this other thing. So the next morning, it's just like, to get it. Anyway, it's almost death there. But with when you're compassionate with someone and help someone, you feel good the next day, 10 days later, you know, there's no hangover. You know what a hangover is? Hangover is when one drinks and they so-called feel good, and then the next morning they feel like hell. You ever seen someone with a hangover?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I went to the university, I never drank. But I went to the university the next morning, you know, Sunday morning, everybody would be lying in the hall of the dormitory, all the with their tongue hanging out and, you know, hanging over the toilet, you know, with their mouth, you know. They'd be feeling really bad. But you help someone and then you feel really good. So so compassion is actually one of our needs. As you become Krishna conscious, of course. Because if you're not Krishna conscious, you have misplaced compassion. So when I'm talking about being, taking responsibility for ourselves, that doesn't mean not feeling wanting to help people, but it's up to people whether they take the help or not. That's another thing. Like in my position of guru, I like helping people, but if someone doesn't want my help, I don't get all like upset and start crying and suicidal. Otherwise, you know, I would have jumped off buildings like many, many times. What do they say? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You ever hear that saying before? So it's my responsibility. My responsibility is to be compassionate and to bring people to Krishna consciousness, and it's their responsibility to take it. You cannot force someone to chant purely. You can't just put a gun to their head and say, you're very inattentive in your chanting. Chant better, Japa, or you're finished. You're finished, Gokul, you know. Of course, he probably will chant better, Japa, with a gun stuck in his head. I was driving the other day, I was in a car the other day, and someone was driving. They weren't such a good driver, so they were helping me chant Japa by their driving. You understand? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Pure Japa. So that's what I mean, not being so even a guru shouldn't be codependent with his disciples. He can offer Krishna consciousness, but it's up to them. You got free will. I mean, I want you to be Krishna conscious, but I'm not going to feel guilty if you don't become Krishna conscious. I'm not going to feel, it's my fault. He didn't become Krishna conscious. He's smoking marijuana. It's my fault. What did I do wrong? Oh my God. And then I think about my past. Did I say the wrong thing to him? Did I tell him I didn't love him? You know? You know, you can't, you go crazy if you live your life like that, isn't it? I mean, some gurus actually feel like that and you see they get sick. You know, when I first became a guru, I thought I'd make all my disciples Krishna conscious in 1 month or less. Then it changed to 1 year or less. Then it was like 10 years or less. then it was in the same lifetime. And then it became 100 lifetimes. So, so I became more practical. They advanced in Krishna consciousness. So, anyway, so one has to see the world in a practical way. You can't make anyone do anything as far as Krishna consciousness or morality. You can't. You can't. You can try your best. Yeah, it's your responsibility to try your best. That's right. But the rest is up to them. Simple, isn't it? Otherwise, you're going to be guilty all the time. Anytime you have children, you know, that's another thing. Children, you try your best. I mean, they decide to be Krishna conscious and good. That's great. You're happy. And if they don't, they've made the decision. You haven't, you know, hopefully you haven't done anything wrong. I mean, if you have done something wrong, maybe something is your fault. Like if you abuse them or something, then it may be your fault. But otherwise, you tried your best. That's all I know. I'm trying my best to make people Krishna conscious, and they make their own decision. And I feel bad if they make the wrong decision. But it doesn't destroy me. You understand? So that's guilt. Where it destroys you, it just tears you apart. Or you manipulate people with guilt. You have to know how to respond to guilty manipulation. Because people do that all the time. If you really wanted to serve Prabhupada, that's the same thing as if you really love me. If you really wanted to serve Prabhupada, you would do this. You know, how many times do we hear that, you know? That's it. That's the most typical form of guilt. If you really wanted this, you would do this. Or, you understand? If you really like this, you would do this. Instead, I say, you know, whatever. I'll do whatever I want to serve Krishna. I want to do what Krishna wants. So don't get manipulated by anyone. Use your free will. Then you'll be happy. But if you're always feeling guilt trips, then you're miserable. You get sick in so many ways, isn't it? Fly your own plane and give instruction to others. Like we gave the example last night, it was interesting. When you learn to fly your own plane, then you can fly a plane with many other people in it. But if someone jumps out, it's not your fault. Like ISKCON is described as a boat, and people jump off of the boat, it's not the captain's fault. You know, of course he may stop the ship for a while to look for him. He has these cruise ships, you know, and sometimes people jump off. I've been reading about that. There's one time one lady fell off and her boyfriend fell off, jumped after her to try to save her, and they both died. I'm not saying you shouldn't try to save someone. But, you know, that's life. Okay, any other interesting questions? That's interesting. That's an interesting discussion. Yeah. Jilani Bas?
I just wondered, shortly, you can say something about this manipulation, because it's very, for me, it's a very interesting topic. What are these kinds of
the guilt is one. There's many ones. There's threats. There's guilt. There's fear. Yeah.
I wanted to ask one sub-question which I wanted to ask about emotional manipulation.
Yeah.
This is one very thing which is, I was thinking a lot about it. And how to distinguish that from, you know, like when you really love somebody and somebody is, you know, like really trying to
help.
Or reciprocate the law, and on the other hand, you are really trying to manipulate somebody with your law or something like that. This is his question. question wants to suggest that you can explain this part.
When you're really trying to manipulate someone with your... Well, it's not love if you're trying to manipulate them.
Like your children, you know, like, I love you, but you need to do this and that, you know, like...
Well, yeah, certain things, I mean, you have a need to protect them, like... I love you and I don't want you to die, so please don't run across the street unless I'm holding your hand. You know, there's certain things, yes, that's important sometimes with children, but it's not, you have to explain it, you have to take the time to explain what you mean. You say, because I love you, I want you to go to school. I mean, children doesn't compute in their minds. So that's the whole thing about taking care of children, which is another course I give. And one can attend. We charge 5,000 euros for that course. But anyway, so... anyway, I'm just joking. So that's another thing. When you're dealing with children, you should take the time to explain why it's in their best interest to do something. Instead of saying, because I love you, hold my hand, don't cross the street without me. No, you explain that what will happen is that there's these big cars... And they would cause you a lot of pain in your body. You could die, and you don't want to die. You know, you take the time. But most people don't take the time. When they have to help someone, they don't take the time to explain why it's good for them. They just say, it's good for you. And you say, why is it good? Because I said so. But you have a right, even with the guru, to ask, why is something good for me? You know, if you're doing something blindly... I mean, it may be good for you, but it's really not the best thing to do things blindly. You should have understand why. Like with Nirmagraha, to do things blindly in Krishna consciousness. So you take the time. That's love. You know, why am I asking you to do this? Because I'm concerned. Why do I want you to go to the university? Because I'm concerned in the future that you'll have enough money to support yourself. Do you want to be there on the streets? Living like a Hare Krishna, not just joking. Living like, that was just a joke. Don't worry about it. Living like a bum on the streets with nothing to eat. And then you know, parents can even take someone to see the poor people on the street. Is this what you want in your life? You make the decision, but you have to take the time with people. Oftentimes we use guilt trips because we don't want to take the time. People have to take the time with each other. I mean, that's another problem also in married life. The men don't want to take the time with the wife to talk to her. You know, the men are from Mars. Ladies from Venus. Anyway, so... And they just said, you know... They're just like, great, do this, and they preach, you know. The preaching is used in a manipulative way, too, without concern for the other person. Well, you're not the body, you should be detached. Huh? And so, you know, basically, you know, people have different emotional needs, so you have to function in such a way, compassionately being aware of people's emotional needs, isn't it? Anyway, this is practical stuff. So your question, Jnanivas, is like all the different types of manipulation you want to learn? We have another course where we teach how to manipulate people. And how to hypnotize people to make people do what you want. And turn them into little clones. And there's one organization that actually teaches that. It's called Landmark Forum. I don't know if you've heard about them before. It's become popular in Slovenia. I talked about that the other day. But anyway, you can learn hypnotism. I teach that too. So interesting how I learned all these things. So I teach you how to the power of suggestion. I mean, one time I was just joking with someone, you know, and I'm also a trained hypnotherapist. So I put the suggestion in their minds. I said, every time I touch my ear in this way, you will start laughing hysterically. So then a few days later, I was giving Bhagavatam class, and I went like this just to test to see if it worked, and the poor lady was just like fell on the floor laughing hysterically. And I said, well, this is, I shouldn't be doing this anymore. That's not honesty. So, if you really want to learn how, I suggest that book, The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense. Write that down. The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense. It'll teach you how to deal with these types of manipulative techniques in a compassionate way, not to say, you're abusing me, you're manipulating me. I mean, because that doesn't work either. I humbly suggest, there may be a copy of that book. This lady has written several books about, verbal self-defense. And I think there's another one in the series, the more about the gentle art of verbal self-defense. But, basically this one book is actually very good. And it teaches you the different things that people say that to manipulate you. And you're going to, you can study it if you want. And it teaches ways to respond. It's called verbal self-defense. It's like judo. When you learn judo, you use the person's own energy to defend yourself. It's not that you have to be so strong in judo. Did you know that? In judo, if someone rushes at you, you use their momentum to flip them. Not that you have to flip them, but their momentum, your momentum, what that means? That means the energy that they're using to come at you, you just direct in such a way that they flip over. And that's really verbal self-defense. It's not a cruel thing or mean thing. It's a way to rectify that abusive or manipulative situation, which we all find ourselves in from time to time. I'd suggest reading that book. Okay? It's probably on Kindle, Amazon.com or something like that. It's been years since I've read it. I mean, it's probably been 15 years since I read the book. And, I'm sure it's widely there on the internet. What? I forget her name. Just look it up, Google. Google's the author. Google, The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense. It's a very, nice lady who wrote the book. She's actually appeared on television and done some interviews like that. But it's really good in dealing, interpersonal dealings, learning how to deal with things. I think we have to end now. Because we've got a lot of things to do before we head for Bosnia today. Okay, so I thank you all. It's a too long a class. All